Okay. Thank you so much for joining us. We are here with the International Franchise Association's Women's Franchise Committee's podcast, Her Success, Stories of Female Leaders. My name is Catherine LeBlanc. I am the CMO at Painting with a Twist, and joining me today is Mary Kennedy Thompson, Chief Operating Officer at Neighbourly. Thank you so much for joining.
Certainly, Catherine. Thanks for inviting me.
Yes, and as I mentioned, I'm super excited to talk to you a little bit about your path and how you grew in your path, and I have some specific questions regarding some things that I'm facing that I would love your input on. So I wanted to start with when you first opened your Cookies by Design franchise location, did you know or did you aspire to be in the leadership roles that you eventually got into?
No, it's interesting you ask that because Mary in 1994 would have looked at Mary in 2020 and said, oh my goodness, I had no idea that those opportunities were even out there. I had been a Marine Corps officer and was a sales representative for a company, and I was making really good money, but I wasn't very happy because I really missed leading a team, and I wanted to control my own destiny, and I was pretty sure I wanted to start my own business, but I didn't know how. That's one of the things I love about franchising is it's a system that you can fall in on. And so my husband came home one day from a chamber mixer with a little brochure from then Cookie Bouquet. And I kept looking at it going, man, I could sell these all day long. I know how to sell things. This would be so much fun, but I don't know how to make the cookies. I don't know how to run the business. And on the back, there were three magic words for franchising information. And I sent away, the packets came in the mail, and I sat down with my husband and said, this is what I want to do. And so I never thought about the career that I would have in franchising and how good franchising would be to me, because it has been quite an adventure.
That's amazing. So when was that first opportunity, or when did you see the potential for it?
Well, our plan all along was to buy them. We were at multi-unit locations. We had three locations, and our plan was to buy them and build them and then sell them. And that would be our nest egg for our retirement, which is what they became. I always like having conversations with people about the difference between being rich and wealthy. Rich is when you're making a lot of money, but when you stop making the money, you're done and you don't have anything to show for it. Wealthy is when your money works for itself. And my husband back then, he was a stockbroker. And so we really saw this as a chance to build this nest egg because we had been in the military. And as much as I love the Marine Corps, military doesn't pay very well. So we had a lot of catching up to do. Mm-hmm. And so when we got to the point that we thought the businesses were ready to sell, I called the franchisor. And the president of the company at the time said, why don't you come work for us? And I joke about this, but I actually said, I can't go work for the dark side. And she laughed. And she said, no, you know, you're in the 32nd largest market, but you're my sixth largest franchisee. I really want you to come teach others, because they didn't have a field program at the time. And I said no a couple times. And it was long enough ago that she mailed me a ticket. And she said, you have to come. I sent you a ticket. So I went up there. And she said, what do you want to do? Tell me what you want to do. What title do you want? And so my first title was shop facilitator. I just thought it was a cool title. And that first year I did 130 site visits. And I wanted to go back and buy my stores again because I learned so much going out to all these locations. I was like, oh my gosh, I had no idea there were all these other things I could be doing better. And that's where, you know, this was a young franchise at the time. You know, when you get a franchisor that gets solid systems put in place and really knows how to teach that franchisee how to grow, I got very excited about that. And I didn't think about it as a career opportunity. I thought about it, I've always thought art as a way to help others. And so I was fascinated with the art and the science of getting inside someone's head, figuring out why did they become a franchisee, and helping them grow their business. It fascinated me, and it still fascinates me to this day.
Well, and it's so forward looking of that then president to bring in a franchisee, a successful franchisee, to then help build out that field ops. And you really got to build it out from the ground up, right? So almost like a startup. That's awesome.
It was fun, and I pretty much did every job in that company until I was president of the company. I would just, I started doing site visits, and then I hired people to do site visits. And then I was, essentially the vice president of operations, and then the founder of the company asked me if I would come be the president. And I've had a number of really good mentors in my life, and I told one of my mentors that I'm not ready. And he said, if you wait till you're ready, you'll never move. He said, stop waiting till you're ready, jump and learn as you're going, and make sure you're always learning. And so that I jumped and never looked back. It's funny because I thought my favorite job I'd ever have would be being a franchise business coach. But then I was a president.
Right.
Being a president, I thought that was my favorite job. And then I got to be the chief operating officer for Neighborly and lead leaders and have our brand presidents roll up to me. And that is the coolest job ever, you know, because you get to work with all these leaders who are very passionate about what they do. So, you know, there's four levels of leadership. There's lead self, lead others, lead leaders, and lead organizations. And it's been fun doing all four of those over the time.
Yeah. So when you became president at Cookies by Design, how did you then transition? You know, you kind of built you grew up with the brand, right? So you were the franchisee, then you built the field. So what was it like leaving that, or what went into the decision to leave that and move on into Mr. Rooter?
Well, you know, it's interesting. I've always been very active in the International Franchise Association. I've been part of it for more than 20 years now. And I kept running into these people from a company called Dwyer Group. One of them is our CEO, Mike Bidwell. And every time I ran into Dwyer Group, now Neighborly folks, they were special. They had this code of values that they talked about and lived. They were passionate about what they did. They were very helpful to everybody else. And I just was impressed with them. And one day Mike reached out to me and he said, you know, I have our largest brand, which is a plumbing company, Mr. Rooter, and I'd like to talk to you about coming to take that brand. And I said, well, I don't know anything about plumbing. I know the gift industry. I grew up in the gift industry. And I actually was considering buying out my franchisor. And I told him that. I said, I think I'm going to be the franchisor. I'm going to buy out the franchisor. And he said, well, you should make her an offer, because if you're not going to do that, you should come work for us. And so we talked for about 6 months, and we teach a really good class on recruiting. And when the first time I attended that class, I was like, oh my gosh, that's everything he used on me. About getting to know the person and showing them where their future can be and how to get there and why it matters. And so about over 6 months, we had conversation, and then he waited another 6 months for me because I didn't want to just leave my franchisor. You know, I was where I'd grown up. I still love those people.
Right.
And so, I remember the first month I was leading Mr. Rooter, I had an interview with some organization, and they said, well, what's it like to, you know, you're the first woman to lead a large plumbing company. What's it like to be a woman leader? And I'm like, I don't know. What's it like to be a male leader? I don't think leadership is gender biased. I think leadership is leadership, you know, taking care of your people, being a clear communicator, you know, making sure that you take responsibility for the right things and give credit for the right things and, you know, those types of things. And so I didn't even know how to spell plumbing. I joke about that. I knew franchising. And I said that to Mike. I said, I don't know anything about it. He said, yeah, but you know business and you know franchising. And that's the beautiful thing about franchising. I'm extremely biased, but franchising is a great American dream. It's a great Canadian dream. It's the great European dream, because it gives you this chance. It took a, you know, literally a girl out of the Marine Corps who couldn't even spell P&L, didn't even know it stood for profit and loss, and taught me how to be a business person. And so it's a great industry, you know, where you get to belong to a group of people that have a common mission, and you get to control your own destiny. And I love that. And it was very good for me as a franchisee, and it's been very good for me on the franchisor side. And you get to, it's the purest form of leadership, because you they're all independently owned and operated. So you can't say, do it or I'm going to fire you. You got to push, pull, right, show, explain, sell, light the way to lead people toward this common purpose.
Yeah. And for me, you know, I got into franchising unknowingly, you know, going to work for a big brand in New Orleans. That was my goal. And so, you know, going to work at Smoothie King was a fantastic experience, loved the brand, But it did open up this new world to me of an industry that I really wasn't even aware of. And it was perfect timing because I was coming into it at the same time that my husband and I were opening our own small business. And so it really connected what I was doing outside of work with opening a small business and what I was doing inside of work of creating success for the small business owners I was working for. So I think that you hit the nail on the head as far as what, when you get the franchising bug, it really comes from wanting to see the success of the small business owners you're working for.
I don't know why we don't spend more time teaching franchising across all means of education and showing people that there's a wonderful path. I never came into franchising for the path. I came into it for the passion, and I got this amazing path where I've traveled the world over. I've met some of the most amazing people. I've networked with people across all industries. I've gotten to work hand in hand with business owners who are living their dreams. I can't think of something I'd want to do more than what I do now.
Right. And it's almost like you stumbled upon it.
Yes. Yeah. Cause I just wanted to own a cookie business. Right. That's all. Right. I wanted to control my own destiny. And I knew I didn't know business enough to do it on my own, that I was going to need a system to fall in on.
Mm-hmm. So you mentioned something earlier around clear communication, and that was something that I really wanted to pick your brain on, because I think that's the key, right, to any leader role, but also anytime you want to get something done, you have to have a clear communications plan so that you can get the buy-in, so that you can get everybody, you know, going up the mountain together. So do you have any kind of quick tips or you know, a list that you follow every time you're kind of communicating a really complex strategy or rollout? I mean, you've been through so much of that in your career.
I've had the privilege of learning from some pretty amazing leaders and watching them through the years, but both in the military, in franchising, at every level. And I'd start with this. I tell everybody, write the word communicate down, and then I want you to draw a big X through it and stop worrying about communicating and start worrying about connecting. Connect with people. Figure out their hopes, wishes, dreams, and goals. Understand where they're trying to go to. And even when you have to, like right now through the COVID, when you have to communicate a very complex and scary message, if you're not connected to the people you're communicating with, you're going to miss the message. So the first thing we teach a leadership class here that I teach is called Leading with Purpose on Purpose. And the very first thing I talk about is purposeful leaders understand you must connect first and spend that time there. So then when you have these hard messages, it there's like this shorthand to how you communicate. So I'd start there. And then the second thing I'd always say is I think really smart leaders are great simplifiers. And I don't mean but they skip past the details or that they don't look deep enough. They do, and then they figure out how to say it in a way that is the simplest, easiest. It's very hard to do. Mm-hmm. And simplify that message. And they understand that just about the time you're sick and tired of saying something, someone's hearing it for the first time. So you got to tell them and what you're going to tell them. Then you got to tell them. And then you got to tell them what you just told them. And I always joke and say, and if it's a millennial, you better text it to them as well.
Right.
And so leaders get bored with their own message. We get bored. I like the next shiny object. But the people that I'm serving, they haven't gotten it yet, or they need to hear more. And the last thing on communications, I think, is the most important, other than connecting, is staying positive and understanding that optimism multiplies everything. And I'm not talking about false optimism. When you're leading people and you're getting them engaged, there's two things they believe. They believe tomorrow can be bigger than today, and they understand that they get to be part of it. So like with COVID, you get the message to tomorrow will be bigger, and you're going to be part of this solution, and here's what it looks like. And part of doing that is, you know, when the recession hit way back in 07, 08, I was brand new president, Mr. Reuter, and I was pretty nervous, and I was trying to figure out how to communicate in a positive way to my franchisees. And what do I say? And I called my dad, who was a 3-time combat veteran. I said, Dad, I'm trying to figure this out. And he said, you know what to do. And I said, no, I don't. That's why I'm calling you. And he said, well, your job as a leader in the scary times is to whistle in the dark. He said, you know, your people can't see you, but they need to hear you because it's so dark. So whistle a lot, whistle loudly, walk toward the light, and they'll follow you. He said, and so, and I'm sure you've listened to a lot of webinars through the COVID that leaders are saying, you have to talk all the time. You have to say it again and get out. And we've hosted hundreds of town hall meetings. I'd say almost thousands of town hall meetings and thousands of communications and thousands of one-on-one calls, because all of that mattered to whistle in the dark and get them understanding that tomorrow would be bigger than today and how they fit into that.
That's awesome. And it is perfectly the perfect message for me right now, because that is what we're moving through, right? Like every other company, and we are moving through the same message over and over again. And I'm proud of what the leadership team at Painting with Twist has been able to do to increase those communications. And, you know, the way that you put it, as far as whistling in the dark, you know, it really makes sense for what we're going through right now.
Yeah, it was very good advice for me. I needed it at the exact moment. And we talk about that in our company now. We'll say, yeah, we're whistling right now. This is what we're whistling, and yeah, Making sure that they can see it. And, you know, in fearful times, there's being brave and being bold. Both are important. Brave is you're painted into a corner, you're scared to death, but you got to act, so you act. Bold is when you take actions above and beyond and you bring people with you. And leaders need to make sure, even in, like, we spend a lot of time, some of our conversations with franchisees and brands have been about, how do we make the most of this? Not just survive it, but thrive through it. And mm-hmm. where do we need to change to make the most of this, to better serve our customers, to better serve our franchisees, to do that? And that's being bold. And bold is really scary. If you think brave is scary, bold is really scary. But I like seeing leaders focus on that boldness that they can bring others with them.
That's awesome. That's very inspiring. Thank you. I'm going to switch gears because you said something else that I'm curious about. So when you moved in, you said that you missed, when you moved, got into Cookies by Design, you missed leading a team. And certainly you've, through the four pillars that we talked about earlier, you've led many teams. I'm curious, you know, for me, when I first started leading my own team, I found some interesting things that I didn't realize, you know, was part of leading the team, like managing people. But now that you've reached a level of leading leaders, what is the biggest transition that you found from kind of managing people, managing a team, to leading leaders?
You know, I actually had a lot to learn there. I had led others in the Marine Corps. I had led others when I had my own businesses. I had not done a lot of leading leaders. You think you have, but I really hadn't. And what I found was, when you're leading others, I mean, as a leader, you're there to serve others. You're there to inspire them to be the best versions of themselves and serve them so that they can be the best versions of themselves. And a lot of that as a leader, you know, is the how do you connect and how do you insist on excellence and all of that. When you get to the leading leaders, it's different, because oftentimes they're doing all those things. And part of what your job to do is to challenge them. And so I started off being overly protective of my leaders, and to the point that I made them weaker. And I was stunned to learn that lesson, because I think I'm a pretty, I have high expectations of people. But you can overprotect your people in a way that they don't ever grow. And leaders need to grow. And to grow, you have to challenge. And you have to say, is this really the way it should be? Why are you doing it this way? And be that mirror to them, so that they, to challenge them. And in the beginning, I thought that was not protecting or looking after them. I would overly say, you know, I see this, I see that. You should, instead of letting them learn it, letting them figure that out and self-discover.
That's, you know, the way that you put that sounds elegant, but I can imagine that you've had to have some tough conversations to get those leaders to a place where you want them. How did you kind of cultivate that? If you kind of, it's almost like you had to shift your leadership style, it sounds like.
I did. I had to do a lot less talking and a lot more listening. And that is not a natural place for me. I have to work very hard to be a good listener. I mean, really hard. And what would happen is I would tell them, you need to blah, blah, blah. And they would go blah, blah, blah. And I was very good at getting them to blah, blah, blah. But the next time, because I had told them that, they hadn't gone through the path of understanding why they needed to do that. Mm-hmm. And so, and they didn't grow. And so what I had to do, and I actually went and got some coaching, some professional coaching on it so that I could understand. My job was, I remember my coach said to me once, you have to stop thinking about what you're doing and start thinking about what you're being. And I'm like, I don't know what you mean. You're gonna have to get more direct with me. And he said, stop. You keep telling me that you're trying to listen and you're listening. He said, be curious, be interested. And I on my desk, I have a little post-it note that says, be curious, be interested. And so the more I was curious, I'm like, why are you doing it that way? What's making you make that decision? Why is the brand heading this way? What are, you know, how do you want to get it there? And they started through those questions, they would get to the other side and say, oh, well, I need to do, and it took longer, mm-hmm. but it was more lasting and it stuck.
Right. It takes longer in the beginning, but then you get them to where they need to be to get there faster.
And there's nothing elegant about it. It's messy and complicated, and you have to have a lot of patience to really understand what, you know, understand.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. That's it. I would have to do the same thing. Like write myself a note to say, okay, calm down.
Right.
Yeah.
You can be right and be wrong. That was the hardest part to understand is I might be right and understand exactly where they need to go, but I was wrong because I wasn't letting them find that way. And mm-hmm. leaders need to find that way. My job is to make them a better leader, and that means allowing them to be uncomfortable and letting some things fail forward.
Yeah, and I think too, you know, you work up to these leadership roles, but in your previous role, you weren't necessarily trained for the next one, you know. And yeah. I just like you kind of mentioned, one of the things that I always say is, you know, baptism by fire is the quickest way to learn things, and it sounds like you've really led through that in your career. And it, you know, each time you kind of get that next leadership role, it's another baptism by fire of, oh, wait, I wasn't prepared for this. How am I going to get through?
I think women, I hear women talk a lot about the imposter syndrome. You feel like, I'm not good enough. I can't do this. Yes, you can. And you don't have to know everything about it. You just have to always be a student. And what I've learned is the minute I get to some place that I think I know all the answers, I'm usually in the most wrong place. Mm-hmm. Sometimes my best leading is done when I don't know a lot and I'm asking a lot of questions and I'm learning and growing. And when I'm at the unconsciously competent state and I'm doing, but I'm not asking, I'm missing things.
Mm-hmm. And I do, you know, that's an interesting insight because you want to approach the role with, you know, whatever you're doing, with competence and with, you know, oh yeah, I got this. I know what I'm doing. And you want to walk into the room with full confidence and nobody's going to knock me down, but it's in that getting knocked down that you come out with a better product for different projects that you are working on or whatnot. But it isn't a very uncomfortable place to live.
And if you're the one with all the answers, then you really don't need anybody else in the room.
Right.
So, but it, right. I mean, it took me a long time. I've been in this role 5 years, and I think it was a good 2 years before I was leading leaders in a way. And I still have a lot of opportunity there, leading leaders in a way that would help them grow and help their organizations grow.
What's it like to be in charge of 21 different brands?
Well, I would start with this. The North American brands roll up to me, so that's 14. And what I would share about that is, what you look for is where you can leverage best practices, where you can put leaders together. One of the things I learned, was that, it's the people and, it's the people. I don't have to do all of that. I don't have to be the one with all the answers. I have this whole group of really smart leaders and I marry them together quite a bit, and I'll say, you know, you'd be good with this one. He's really good at this, and she's really good at that. And I want you two to work together on this project, or I want you two to work together on something that both your brands have a need for. And so when I started learning that I didn't have to be the answer to it all, the answers were in front of me and the people were there, and mm-hmm. I could leverage that, I got a lot better at what I was doing.
That's awesome. Okay, one other question for you. You know, I was interested to hear that while you were at Reuter, you became a professionally licensed plumber. And so that's, you know, an example of you leading by example. So, you know, as you grow in your leadership roles and in the role that you have now, how do you maintain that kind of leading by example and getting your hands dirty, you know, even if you don't have to?
Yeah, you know, it's an interesting balance. And, you know, I hear a lot of people talk about balance. I never have balance. I wish I did. I try every day. In the aggregate, maybe I've had balance, but there are days I'm all work and days that family mm-hmm. takes over. And, you know, when you have kids and you're working, there's a lot. And part of that balance is where are you hands on and where should you be lifted up? You know, like you think about two coaches, one coach is on the football field and one coach is up in the skybox. They both see the same field, but they see different mm-hmm. things. And where is it that you should be? And sometimes you need to go between the two places. Mm-hmm. But the reason I went to get my plumbing license was I thought I would be a better leader, understanding more of the dynamics of the plumbing world. And it taught me a lot. And the biggest thing it gave me was a very healthy respect for our technicians, our service professionals who were out there doing that day. It was 4 years. It was one of the hardest tests I've ever taken. It was a day long test. I mean, it took wow. like 6 hours. And I was just praying I'd pass. I mean, it was a hard test.
I don't want to do this again.
Yeah. I mean, it was really hard. And so it gave me a healthy respect to understand that. And I think sometimes, you know, I hadn't grown up in the world of plumbing, so I needed to understand some of that. And I think some leaders, when you come in from the outside, that's when it's good to take some moments and go deep. Mm-hmm. If you've grown up from the inside, so when I was at Cookies by Design, I'd grown up from the inside. I knew everything there was to know about making cookies and producing cookies and being productive and making money doing cookies. But because I knew so much, I couldn't do the 30,000 foot level because I'd always get stuck in the details. So I would say if you've grown up within those ranks, sometimes you need to step out, let somebody else do those details and make time to look at the 30,000 foot level. So I was very good at looking at the 30,000 foot level at Mr. Reuter, and I needed the balance of understanding mm-hmm. that side. So it depends on, so like now in this role, I've kind of grown up in this company now. Mm-hmm. And so I have to spend time lifting myself out of the details because I've been, I was president of Mr. Reuter, and then I've been interim president of four of our other brands. Mm-hmm. I've got a fairly detailed view of that, which means I have to oftentimes make myself get in that skybox and look at the field mm-hmm. from a different perspective.
Mm-hmm. That makes sense. So where do you picture yourself in 5 years?
It's a great question. Well, first I will tell you, because I love franchising, I see myself in franchising, and I see myself with Neighborly because our vision is to be so remarkable. We've become a beloved household name. I love that. I love mm-hmm. everything about that. And I very much, you layer that with our code of values and who we are. It talks to who I am as a human being. Mm-hmm. Where I see myself 5 years from now is making sure that the leaders that this company needs are in place for the, you know, the most important thing I can be doing right now is what succession planning is getting mm-hmm. the right leaders in place. So that I keep this company strong. That's one of the things I like to watch and see how does something do after a leader leaves, because that says a lot about that leader. Mm-hmm. And I serve at the pleasure of the board, so who knows when I'll leave. But what I do know is that I always want to be sure that I've got people that can step into my shoes. That's the most important thing I can do right now. So when you say 5 years from now, what I'd say is I'm making sure that the right leaders are in the right place and have been given opportunities to grow and be ready for that.
That's awesome. Well, that's what I had to talk to you about today. You've given me such a breath of fresh air, you know, getting out of my own routine and getting to you a little bit, but also getting inspired, you know, by the path that you have taken. So I really appreciate your time. I know that others will be inspired when they hear and see this, and truly appreciate your time.
You asked great questions. I so appreciate it. And I just believe this final thought is we've all been spending the last few months being very brave because we had to. I think we should now start. And I say this especially to the women out there listening. It's time for us to be bold. We know what to do. We can show people how tomorrow can be bigger and how they get to be part of it. And women are very good at communicating that. They do that all day long to children, to their children. And so let's go be bold and show everybody what we can do in the world.
Perfect. Thank you, Mary.
Thanks, Catherine.